The Poisoned Crown by Maurice Druon, read by Peter Joyce. Standing at one of the windows in the huge Castel Nuovo, which had a view over the port and bay of Naples, the old Queen Mother, Marie of Hungary, watched a ship weighing anchor. Making sure that no one could see her, she wiped a tear from the corner of a lashless eyelid with a roughened finger.
"Now I can die," she murmured.
For her dearly loved Clemence, a princess of 22, without territorial inheritance, rich only in her reputation for beauty and virtue, she had recently obtained the most important of alliances, the most imposing of marriages. Clemence was leaving to become Queen of France. Thus she, who was the most deprived by fate of all the princesses of Anjou, who had waited the longest for a match, was now to receive the finest of kingdoms, and to reign as suzerain over all her relations. It clearly illustrated the teaching of the Gospel. Prologue. Philip the Fair had been dead 6 months. To the government of that remarkable monarch, France owed the benefits of a long period of peace, the abandonment of disastrous overseas adventures, the organization of a powerful network of alliances and suzerainties, notable increases of territory by union rather than conquest, a definite economic expansion and a relative stability of currency, the non-interference of the Church in temporal affairs, the control of wealth and large private interests, the expression of the voice of the people in the councils of power, the security of the individual, and the organization of state administration. His contemporaries were naturally not always very conscious of these ameliorations. Progress has never meant perfection. Some years were less prosperous than others. There were periods of crisis and revolution. The needs of the people were far from being satisfied. The Iron King had methods of making himself obeyed which were not to everyone's taste, and he was more concerned with the grandeur of his kingdom than with the individual happiness of his subjects. Nevertheless, when he died, France was the foremost, wealthiest, and most powerful of all the nations of the Western world. It took his successors 30 years of perseverance to destroy his work, and, inordinate ambition alternating upon the throne with extreme incompetence, to open the country to invasion, deliver society over to anarchy, and reduce the population to the lowest condition of misery and despair. In the long succession of vain imbeciles who, from Louis X, the Hutin, to Jean the Good inclusive, were to wear the crown, there was to be but one exception. Philippe V, the Long, second son of Philip the Fair, who returned to the methods and principles of his father, even though his passion for reigning led him to commit crimes and invent dynastic laws which led directly to the Hundred Years' War. The processes of decay were therefore to continue during a third of a century, but it must be admitted that a great part of the destruction was completed during the first 6 months. Institutions were not sufficiently stable to be able to function without the personal intervention of the sovereign. The feeble, nervous, and incompetent Louis X, overwhelmed from the very first day by the magnitude of his task, resigned the cares of power to his uncle, Charles of Valois, who was, it appears, a good soldier, though a detestable politician, who spent his whole life searching for a throne, and had now, at last, found an outlet for his turbulent blundering. The middle-class ministers, who had been the backbone of the preceding reign, had been imprisoned, and the skeleton of the most remarkable of them all, Enguerrand de Marigny, once rector-general of the kingdom, was bleaching on the forks of the gibbet of Montfaucon. Reaction was triumphant. The Barons' Leagues...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?